Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order February 26, 2025, 2 minutes after 1 p.m. Senator Hoffman and Senator Olson are both excused. Senator, with me today is Senator Keel, Senator Cronk, Senator Kaufman, myself, Stedman, and Senator Merrick will be joining us in a few minutes. We are going to continue this afternoon with our public testimony dealing with our budgets for FY 26, which is Senate Bill 56, the operating budget, Senate Bill 57, the capital budget, Senate Bill 58, mental health budget, and Senate Bill 59, which is the supplemental budget for the FY 25 year, the year we're currently in. We have a two-minute limit on the testimony. We're going to watch the clock, try to be respectful of the limit, and I've asked my colleagues when they spell me off here at the table to go ahead and hold everybody to a maximum of 3 minutes and terminate the conversation at 3 minutes to be respectful for all the other Alaskans that want to call in so everybody has time to call in and everybody has equal amount of time. We'd like to focus the comments on the budgets in front of us with some little bit of flexibility here. This afternoon, we're going to hear from Fairbanks, the Interior, Copper River, and the Offnets. Sign-up deadline will be 2:15. That's 2:15. But before I turn the meeting over to Senator Cronk, who's going to take care of Fairbanks, Interior, Copper River Valley, and the Offnets, we have some young Alaskans here that would like to testify. I could have them come forward from the 4-H group, Dara Bird, Morgan Carlson-Kelly, Joaquina Rapnow. They'll pronounce their own names, and we'll have them go one at a time. And then I think they have a chaperone that'll come after the young ladies. And just when you start, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, just who you are and who you represent or what town you're from, and tell us a little bit about yourself, and then go into your testimony.
Okay. Good afternoon, members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Dara Bird. I'm from Fairbanks in House District 34, and today I'm representing myself.
Good afternoon, members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Morgan Carlson-Kelly. I am from Anchor Point in House District 6. Today, I am representing myself.
Good afternoon, members of the Senate Finance Committee. I'm Joaquina Rapnow, and I'm from Palmer, Alaska, and I represent myself and in House District 25.
Okay. Which one would like to go first?
Today we are asking for your support of the $3 million in the governor's proposed university capital budget for the Institute of Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Extension, or INRE. While the Board of Regents requested $5 million, the proposed $3 million will have a substantial impact over the next 5 years.
So we are in Juneau this week learning about the Alaska legislature and how to become more involved. This is because of the support for 4-H and the Youth and Governance Program, which is housed under INRA. I could spend time explaining all the organizational and funding mechanisms, but I would rather tell you how 4-H has impacted my life. I have been involved in this program since I was 5 years old, meaning I have been here in 4-H as a member 11 years. I would say the biggest thing about 4-H for me is that it's been an outlet throughout all those years for activities that I would never have gotten to experience otherwise. As I'm a homeschool student, the things I could do with other kids and clubs and activities like that are limited, and 4-H is something that filled that gap. I was involved in a lot of livestock, as 4-H is renowned for. I did a lot of small poultry, chicken raising. I learned a lot about how to take care of other living beings and to be responsible for something like that. It's a big task to learn. Another thing 4-H has done for me is I've been in a lot of sewing clubs and cooking, and those are activities that maybe as a kid nowadays are actually more often than not neglected and not learned. And that's something that I'm very proud to have learned through 4-H. I've also been able to do a lot of public speaking activities and competitions, not just for public speaking, also musical performance. Art competitions has also been one of them. Through 4-H, I'm able to submit a lot of art projects and sewing things that I wouldn't have anywhere else to showcase through county fairs. And that's something that, another thing that 4-H has done in particular that's special. Another thing that makes 4-H a unique program is that it allows us to do community service. It gives us a way for us to do that, and I've been able to go to the food bank and volunteer, make boxes, and send those out to the community. And not just that, we have a lot of projects like making hats and creating tie blankets for animal shelters. And maybe those are things that on your own, in your own house as a homeschooler, you wouldn't feel confident enough to do. But when you're in a club that's really supportive and you have members that help you and can teach you things you would never learn, you're able to do. So my final statement is that 4-H is truly a place for young participants to flourish, hence my testimony today.
Okay, we're going to have just a brief at ease. We're back on the record. Continue the public testimony, and if you could introduce yourself again before you start speaking so the recorder can know who it is and then do your testimony.
So my name is Morgan Carlson Kelly. I am from Anchor Point, Alaska, and I'm in House District 6. Today I'm representing myself. So for my story of 4-H, I've only technically been in a member for a year registered as a member. But I've been participating with my group and my friends and who are all members for the past probably 5 years. And we're always doing activities, and we're a big equestrian group, so like we all do horses and stuff. But in the past year, since I just registered probably a little over a year ago today, I've been able to go on many different conferences. I'm a big traveler. I've been able to go to this program, Youth and Governance, which is why I'm here today. This is my second year in a row. I've met with most of you individuals. And last year it changed my life. I didn't want anything to do with politics. I didn't want anything to do with the government because my family is very different opinions on the left and right. And I wanted to avoid it with all costs because I was not an arguer. I'm not an arguer. And I came in and then I found out that government is a lot more than just the politics, and it's helping so many people. And then now I want to go into the government. A few months ago in November, I was able to go to the conference called National Congress, 4-H. And it's mostly a reward trip for a reward trip for a lot of different kids because they work really hard in the States. And I was able to meet students from all over the country. I have friends in Hawaii, Costa Rica, Louisiana, all over the place. And I have so many. And luckily, social media exists, so I hope to see them one day. And I can tell you for sure, I definitely cried on the plane ride leaving because I met so many amazing individuals and saw so many people that if 4-H didn't exist, I wouldn't have been able to meet them. We would all be somewhere like we don't even know if that 4-H was not happening. And overall, 4-H has helped me learn so much and has definitely changed my life.
Yeah. For the record, my name is Yaquina Repno. I'm from Palmer, Alaska, in House District 25, and I'm representing myself. My 4-H kind of story is I started about 5 years ago in 4-H. You can start way younger, but that's just when we kind of found out about it. And I've mainly raised market steers, but there's lots of other projects that my siblings have done, and it's definitely a program that inspires leadership and basically building character and helping create kids into well-capable adults to become future leaders. So this program has really helped me with public speaking and just kind of getting to know more about the government here. And 4-H as a general whole has helped me do that too.
So in closing, your support of the 4-H program through the support of the one-time $3 million funding for IANRA will help grow leaders and engage Alaskans for the future. Thank you for this opportunity and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Michaela Anderson. You ladies did good.
Thank you.
Hello, for the record, I'm Michaela Anderson. I'm from Fairbanks in District 34. Thank you, members of the Finance Committee, for the time to speak today, and thank you for allowing our youth to speak. So I'm here representing myself, but I'm also here as a chaperone for the 4-H Youth and Governance Program, which is how I got my start in government. I did 4-H from first grade on, so I'm now a leader for the last 10 years. But I started with steers and gardening and any other traditional project and soon became involved in civics and leadership. In 2007, we came down to look for funding for a vice provost for the university and thus sparked the Youth and Governance Program. Since then, the university's seen a evolution, if you will, in their structure, and now 4-H is housed under the Institute of Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Extension. But this program has been around since 2008. We've had three youth work in the building and in other areas of government around the state. Through this program, the youth get to learn about government by creating their own meetings, doing rescheduling. They go into the meetings without adults, as long as they feel comfortable, and they do all of the talking. We are here merely for support, and these kids get to learn how to be engaged citizens and bring that to any industry that they want to do when they grow up. So, in respect of your time, I would just like to say that we would like your support in the $3 million one-time funding over 5 years for IONRI in the UA's capital budget on page 23 of the Red Book. If there's any questions, I'm happy to answer. Otherwise, thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Okay. We'll stay in the room. Have Brian Ridley come up, please.
I'll try to stay on time, but I'm not quite sure how long my speech is going to be, so.
Well, I got a clock here, don't worry.
My name's Brian Ridley, and I'm the chief chairman of the Tanana Chiefs Conference in Interior Alaska. I'm from the Native Village of Eagle. I represent 37 federally recognized tribes and 42 communities altogether, and about 20,000 tribal members. I'm here today to talk about our youth, education, and behavioral health funding. We come to Juneau every year advocating for school funding. Those of you from rural Alaska know that schools are the heart of our communities. The consequences of insufficient BSA funding includes reduced support and teaching staff, difficulty providing higher level coursework. For instance, in Fort Yukon, there are no in-person classes for juniors and seniors. In all of the rural school districts, we're seeing an increase in international J-1 visas due to the inability to recruit and retain Alaskans. Although the student count is small compared to our urban counterparts, we're still seeing difficulty covering rising costs of energy, insurance, and other fixed costs, and the loss of experienced maintenance employees due to non-competitive wages impacting the safety and efficiency of our buildings. Just this year, our road system districts have missed out on excellent special ed and career and technical teachers again due to the inability to offer them competitive wages. Please permanently increase the base student allocation. At TCC, we're experiencing a behavioral health crisis. The number of youth who are in the foster care system and aging out with complex mental health needs and trauma is growing faster than we can keep up with. We're seeing up to a 90% increase in reported suicidal ideation in just the last 3 years, and there's been a 58% increase in youth served at our local hospital for behavioral health issues. At least 20% of the behavioral health services we provide are not billable, but are necessary to ensure good health outcomes for our vulnerable clients. The proposed budget indicates a 7% decrease to the behavioral health treatment and recovery grants line item. There are very few in-state options for intensive behavioral health treatment for adolescents. TCC just recently reopened the doors to GRAF, previously operated by Fairbanks Native Association, and we're the only youth behavioral health facility in the interior. The current behavioral health reimbursement model, along with underfunding these grants, makes the burden of operating these types of facilities so great that there's very little incentive to provide this type of service. It just doesn't pencil out. I understand the realities of the current budget situation, but education and youth behavioral health should be the single most important thing you consider this session. Thank you for the hard work you're doing for Alaskans. Masicho.
Thank you. We'll have a brief Eddie's.
Back on the record in Senate Finance, where we're taking public testimony. Let's go off net to Mr. Robert Hall. Please state your name, affiliation, and you have 2 minutes.
All right, Robert Hall, here in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm speaking for myself. I am a major crimes detective here in Fairbanks and wanted to speak a little bit of the importance of child advocacy centers within the state. I've been doing this now for the city for almost 20 years in major crimes for about 5 years. Work hand in hand with Stevie's Place, the local child advocacy center, which is absolutely a force multiplier for the police department. We use the child advocacy centers in my department almost, probably about five, six times a week, it seems. They bring in children from all over both the interior. In fact, the local one here serves an area roughly the size of Texas, if not larger. They provide services that previously, before the CAC stood up, were not reasonable. Kids used to have to be interviewed multiple times for felonious assaults or sexual assaults. They'd have to get interviewed by law enforcement, by medical staff, maybe by behavioral assistants. Having to relive these traumas multiple times and just kind of further perpetuating the trauma. With the step up of CACs, they have to tell their story one time through the multidisciplinary team. I can listen, nursing staff can listen, and these kids can get the services that they need. From my standpoint, I can then put together a solid case and move forward to the local district attorney's office and get prosecution on these offenders. My understanding is CAC's funding is a little bit of a struggle. I certainly don't envy the position that this committee has with having to sort out funding in the state right now, but CACs absolutely serve a purpose and a vital purpose for our communities. So that's what I've got. I'm open to any questions, but I certainly don't want to take up a bunch of your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hall, for your testimony. Up next is Christina Terman. Please state your name and affiliation. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Christina Terman. I'm calling from Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm calling to talk about education funding. I've been following the developments in Juneau really closely, and I've got to say I am not optimistic. To me, it feels like we're just setting ourselves up for a complete year. And so while I will continue to advocate and support an increase to the BSA, I'm actually calling today to propose another idea. I would like to see the Senate bring a transportation bill to the floor, and I'm talking cut and dry, purely just transportation. I spoke with the superintendent here in Fairbanks to inform me that our district is currently subsidizing $2 million towards transportation. I also learned that there is an additional $2 million of COVID relief funds, which will run out after the 25-26 school year, are being directed towards transportation. So this means here in Fairbanks, for the 26-27 school year, our district will need to find an additional $4 million beyond what the state provides, and that's just to maintain our current bus routes. In Fairbanks, we do not offer any busing to charter or magnet schools. So if we want to expand busing to all of our schools, we would require an additional $1 million, which brings the total need to $5 million. This represents approximately a 50% increase from what the state currently allocates towards us. And while I understand this is a big jump, I believe it is a very reasonable request. Right now, it's a big push for schools of choice. We have to ensure students can actually get to them. These funds would be 100% accountable. If we want kids to perform better at school, we better make sure they can get to school. I suspect the overall cost of a transportation bill like this would be significantly less than a blanket ESA increase. Legislators would have to reach out to each district to determine how much additional funding is needed beyond what the state currently gives each district. And I know some districts would maybe not need any additional funding. Some may need small amounts, and others, like ours, will need a large amount. I think this is really targeted funding directed at an immediate and undeniable need. And right now, I just think we need to think creatively. We need to find common ground, and we need to work from those areas. I see transportation funding as a means.
Ms. Terman, please wrap up your comments.
For our schools. Okay, that's it. I just hope you guys would consider a transportation bill. And I'm not saying to quit working on the BSA. I just think this is one piece of the puzzle that we could solve right now.
Thank you, Ms. Terman.
I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Next up is Tarn Coffee. Please state your name and affiliation, and you have 2 minutes.
Hello. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tarn Coffee. I live in Nenana, Alaska, and operate a coffee farm along with my wife, Adrian, and son, George. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I was raised on a farm near Talkeetna and spent many hours doing all the things it takes to start a farm, from clearing the land, cutting and baling hay. This experience prepared me for when we were lucky enough to bid on and receive several parcels in the new Nenana Tochacket Agricultural Development. And with the help and guidance of the Division of Agriculture, in just over 2 years, we have been able to produce our first commercial crop, providing fresh sweet corn to several retail grocery stores in the Matson Valley and Anchorage, as well as selling direct to customers in the Nenana Fairbanks area, and providing our local school with enough corn for the school lunch program. So you can see there is great value in developing a robust agricultural system. We are just one of a growing number of farms in Alaska, but farms need stability and support, not handouts. Some of the ways the Division of Agriculture helps farmers is with new crop trials, operating the Plant Materials Center, giving farmers a place to clean their seed, and offering foundation seed, as well as financial assistance in the way of revolving loan fund and grants. The state helps with soil tests and weed control, but every farmer sometimes needs a little fine-tuning of his or her operation. We also provide inspectors for the seed potato program. Since we have some of the cleanest seed potatoes in the world, this is definitely something we need to hang on to. I would like to encourage everybody to fund the Division of Agriculture as much as possible, and if it is all possible, to fund the Department of Ag as a stronger ag commissioner or
development commissioner will promote agriculture. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Coffey. Up next is Steve Meckel. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. This is Steve Meckel. I'm calling from Fairbanks, Alaska. And my reason for calling in today is to provide support for child advocacy centers and the funding for child advocacy centers. And I can't add a whole lot more to the testimony that was given by, I believe it was Mr. Hall from law enforcement in Fairbanks. But I would like to reiterate the important work that child advocacy centers, the child advocacy center provide. They work with law enforcement and OCS to provide frontline services to children who've been maltreated, oftentimes sexually abused. The funding streams that have kept them going for years is starting to go away, and it's critically important that we continue to fund those CACs in Alaska. I appreciate the difficult work that the legislators have, and especially the Finance Committee, and I thank you for taking the time to listen to your constituents. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rube. Up next is Al Bell. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, thank you, sir. Yes, my name is Al Bell, and I'm representing myself. I live in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I am calling about the funding for the CACs. Again, I want to just like to reiterate the importance of the CACs. The CACs is a very known organization here in Fairbanks. It's a place where kids can tell their stories, and they can be interviewed by trained individuals that really truly care and understand that ways not to re-traumatize, provide trauma to the child that they once have had to go through. So many different people talking to about the same trauma. It consists of teams, medical professionals, law enforcement, mental health. There's times when we have prosecution, child protective services. We have medical staff that does, examinations and courtroom preparation. It's just the advocacy. It is an impeccable place to have your child come and experience some type of trauma. It could be sexual or physical. And I just know that, just thousands and thousands of kids in the Fairbanks area have benefited from CACs. And I'm asking the Senate for whoever's involved to help fund the CACs to be placed in Fairbanks, for all CACs across the state. It would be a tremendous and effective way to utilize funding for our young people and to help our MDTs, and this is the multidisciplinary team, and to work together to help our children and to give them a new life from all the trauma that they have experienced. I thank you for listening to me. I was trying to talk as fast as I can, because 2 minutes is pretty quick. But please consider helping us today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brill, and thank you for what you do for Alaska. Up next is Marjorie Richards. Please state your name and affiliation. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Marjorie Richards. I'm in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm calling to request operating funds for child advocacy centers that be added to the fiscal year 26 budget, operating budget. Full disclosure, I was on the board of directors of RCPC and Stevie's Place for 10 years. Alaska statute requires OCS to refer child sex abuse cases to CACs. In the interior, Stevie's Place is the accredited CAC, coordinating a multidisciplinary team of professionals who assess, protect, advocate for, and prosecute on behalf of abused and neglected children. Stevie's Place, along with the Resource Center for Parents and Children, work to hold offenders accountable and promote healing for children and families. And I ask you to please fund fully this important resource. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Richards. Up next is Matthew Iverson. Please state your name and your affiliation. For the record, you have 2 minutes.
Matthew Iverson. I'm in Fairbanks. I am the investigator of the major crimes for the Alaska State Troopers. I've been a state trooper for 12 years. Within that 12 years, I've utilized the child advocacy centers within the state. The child advocacy centers are a big component to the investigations that we conduct in regards to child abuse, whether that's physical, sexual. Having their funding lower would really bring a disservice to the children that we serve here in the state of Alaska. Here at Stevie's Place, with them seeing thousands of kids throughout the state, they are an area where the kids can come. It's a kid-friendly area. they get to tell their story one time as opposed to telling it multiple times to different people within the multidisciplinary team, which is OCS, forensic nursing, law enforcement, and having them be able to then get behavioral services that they need, therapy services, feeding places, a one-stop-all. They can give resources to the kids, to the families of the children, and without them, we wouldn't be successful in the jobs that we do. It's a teamwork between all of us, and I am representing myself for this calling. That's all I have. Thank you for the time, and I hope that this helps with bringing funding to CDC.
Thank you, Mr. Iverson. I think I'm going to go back. I think I skipped somebody. Mr. Jeremy Roop, please state your name and affiliation. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Jeremy Roop. I am a 28-year veteran in law enforcement, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I appreciate you all listening. That's what I have to say. I can remember a time when we didn't have child advocacy centers, and law enforcement would have to go to schools, or they'd have to go to homes to interview children that had been sexually or physically or both abused. And having CACs in place is an absolute force multiplier, just like what Mr. Robert Hall said. And just kind of piggybacking on what Robert Bell said and the others, these things are kind of a one-stop shop for kids that really don't have a chance. They've had horrible things happen to them. They are Alaska's future, and having a resource for them to be able to go to and get, be able to speak freely about what happened to them, be able to get any sort of mental health, whether that's counseling, whether they need to get some exams done, whether they need to get some evidence collection. It is absolutely a necessity to ensure that these kids can continue on with life, and I've seen that firsthand throughout my career. From not having CCs to fully having them in Stevie's Place here, I'm calling from Fairbanks, and Stevie's Place is our local CAC, and they have done a phenomenal job in going to service and making sure that the kids from all walks of life, whether it's urban or rural settings, have a place to go to deal with the trauma that they've endured. So I appreciate you listening to me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Roop. Appreciate your testimony. We're going to go up to the Glen Allen LIO, and it looks like Dennis McLaughlin. Please state your name, your affiliation. You have 2 minutes.
Hello. I'd like to continue my time to Jason Hoke, please.
That's fair. Mr. Hoke, please.
Yes. How you doing, Senator Kronk and other senators of the Senate Finance Committee? Senator Stedman, see me around Christmas time. Hope you're doing well. My name is Jason Hoke. I'm the Executive Director of Copper Valley Development Association. We're the regional artery here for the Copper Valley area, about the size of West Virginia, with about 2,300 people in it. About 3 years ago, we formed the first ever rural transportation planning organization here in the Copper Valley with the governor and Department of Transportation. I sit here with two board members of the RTPO. Mr. McLaughlin is one, Mr. Becker is another one, and we'll let them speak shortly. We are currently asking, as we scour the budget, we've asked for some projects out here. I haven't seen them in here, but I did find the Copper River Highway Wood Canyon Bridge and Trails, reference number 65237, which I have sent all of you via the LIO earlier today. Senator Kronk, I believe I sent it to your office as well, sir. This is $12.7 million over 3 years on another road to nowhere, bridge to nowhere. It was not approved by the RTPO or vetted anywhere in this area. It's basically for dip netting down the Haley Creek. The state is a partner with us here through ADOT up at the airport. It has been our main focus, but we also focus with the RTPO, which is a committee of Copper Valley Development Association, the ARDER, We focus on economic, natural resource, and other developmental issues here. As Senator Stedman probably can attest, as he helped get the reauthorization of the ARTA program back in 2012 with me. This has never hit our radar, and to find that this is coming out, we thought maybe we'd offer you folks on the Senate Finance an alternative for that $12.7 million out here in the Copper Valley.
Mr. Hoke, you're going to have to wrap up, please.
You have to wrap it up? Yeah, well, one is the Solomon Gulch Dam Rains, which I have sent to the committee, and the other one is the Gulkana Airport Extension, which we've been working with Senator Sullivan to have that airport extended and brought up to 6,800 feet. There's also some food security task force priorities in there, but we would like to ask that you possibly contact Lacey Sanders and redirect this money from the Copper River Highway Road to Nowhere to the airport and energy, both of which have ROIs for the state of Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Hope. Up next from the Glen LIO is Mr. John Becker. Mr. Becker, please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you have 2 minutes.
All right, thank you, Mr. Senator Crump. Pardon my voice, I've kind of lost part of it, but my name's John Becker. I'm the owner of Napa Auto Parts in Glen Allen, Tok, and Valdez. I reside in Glen Allen. I've been here 45 years. I'm just here to express my support. Well, actually, here, let me back up. I am also Vice President of Greater Copper Valley Chamber of Commerce, past President, Secretary of Tok Chamber of Commerce, Board Member of Copper Valley Development Association, and a committee member for the Regional Transportation Planning Organization. Yes, so just what Jason spoke on, I'm just here to kind of express my support for those funds. I feel that they would be better used in the Copper Valley for economic development, through the airport extension. There's been a lot of planning that has been done and in progress, which would benefit us in the valley here economically. The planning, the energy needs in the area, there's planning and design that's done through Copper Valley Electric Association. You might have heard from Executor Jamie Matthews this morning. She's in Valdez testifying, but they have a shovel-ready project for that Solomon Gulch Dam Race, and that would definitely benefit us in our energy in this area. So that's all I have to say. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. Appreciate it. Mr. Dennis McLaughlin, did you wish to testify?
Yes, please.
Please state your name and your affiliation. You have 2 minutes.
My name is Dennis McLaughlin. I am a Copper Center resident. I am a board member of the Copper Valley Development Association, as well as a committee member of the Rural Training Planning Organization. And I, too, am going to speak on my support of the moving of the allocations of the highway to the airport. I think this only will benefit everyone in the Copper Center Valley area, as opposed to the highway, which only seems to benefit the corporation. And it's my understanding that the government is here for the individuals, not for businesses. And you know, putting the money toward the airport is going to expand the economic situation in the Copper River Valley and also bring the state a return on their investment. And I think at, you know, this time, day and age, we have to look at the ROI as well as where we're putting the money. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony. We are now moving back off net to Mr. Ronald Metzner. Please state your name and your affiliation. For the record, you have 2 minutes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Are you hearing me?
Yes. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, good. Thank you. My name is Ron Metzner. I'm a retired visiting Senate speaker. I taught 12 years at in Anchorage at
Yeah, and then that's 30 years up here in Fairbanks, where I live now. I live by the west side of Fairbanks. I'm making a call to, about the is House Bill 69, is that the BSA? Do I have that right?
That would be an education bill, so we're sticking to the actual operation budget.
Okay. Well, I'm sure people have done this before, but I just want to remind everybody, if you take the state inflation calculator you can get to online, you put in the BSA number that we were paying for kids to, in 1999, it was $3,940 per kid, and you just do the inflation, and you get $7,068 right now. And the baseline that we're actually paying is $5,960. So, if you just look at it, we're paying a hell of a lot less than we did 25 years ago, and we got more kids to learn more stuff, and there's all kinds of other issues, and we're going to do more with a lot less money. In fact, even if $1,000 were added on, that would not catch up with inflation. We're actually about $1,100 short. And so $280 is not going in the right direction. I just wanted to point that out to everybody. If you haven't thought about it or don't know it, it's there. And, you know, the buses and all of this stuff, the larger classrooms, you don't get to see, you know, your kids as well, which means kids who have abuse issues, you don't find them as easily. A classroom and the grades change. For every 10 students you add to my classes, the class average drops.
Mr. Metzner, could you please wrap up?
Anyway, that's all I got. I appreciate you listening to me. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Up next is Mr. Wade Binkley. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you, Senator Cronk and committee members, for allowing me to speak today. For the record, my name is Wade Binkley from Fairbanks, and I'm the president of the Riverboat Discovery. And we're a small family business started by my grandparents, and we operate cultural river tours here in Fairbanks. I'm proud to say we'll be celebrating 75 years of operations this summer. As the leader of the company today, I feel really grateful to the family members that came before me. It was their willingness to take risks, their countless hours of sweat equity, and their wisdom and foresight to build and reinvest back into the business in those early days that really make us a successful company today. Now, back in the 1960s, in the early days of statehood, and before the days of oil revenue, lawmakers realized that tourism was a renewable natural resource, and they started a first-of-its-kind cooperative partnership with the private sector that encouraged visitors to come to Alaska. Today, this is known as the Alaska Travel Industry Association, and its partnership with the state of Alaska continues to really be a success story today. ATIA's ability to market Alaska on a global stage is a vital service for its over 600 members, and its mission is to bring visitors from all over the world to Alaska so that operators like us within the industry can buy for that business. Now, make no mistake about it, the dollars that the state spends on tourism marketing are not a handout. And in fact, in 2023, our industry returned $158 million in revenue to the state of Alaska. And for every dollar spent on advertising, that returned $378 and visitor spending within the state. Now, I understand the financial constraints facing our state today, and all of you sitting at the desk today have no easy decisions before you. However, I ask you to consider that tourism is a bright spot for our state's economy, and tourism marketing dollars are a reinvestment in Alaska. It's a reinvestment we can be proud of and one that will benefit future generations of Alaska. Thank you for your time and your consideration today.
Thank you, Mr. Binkley. Up next is Malik Jones. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Well, my name is Malik Jones.
I'm an investigator with the Alaska State Troopers. I am speaking for myself, but I'm calling on behalf of Stevie's Place, which is a child advocacy center in Fairbanks. I just want to reiterate what you already heard and the importance of child advocacy centers. You know, they provide coordinated evidence-based response to children suffering abuse on all levels, which could be mental, physical, and sexual. Child advocacy centers provide a safe place for children to talk about abuse one time. There's a chance for, it provides a space for the multidisciplinary team and hear the story one time. That way the child is not experiencing the trauma over and over again. It also provides assistance for parents, which sometimes is overlooked when children are experiencing these kind of abuse. Sometimes parents are left without a place to go. Child advocacy centers also help out with that. They also hold offenders accountable by working with law enforcement. And, you know, the list goes on, but I just wanted to reiterate some of the things that you've already heard. And once again, child advocacy centers, yes, is a safe place that children can go to talk about abuse without the repeated trauma. Thank you for your time, and I hope that child advocacy centers within the state and specifically Fairbanks can receive funding.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Senator Merrick has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jones, I appreciate you testifying today, and thank you for the difficult work that you do. Do you know how many children go through the Stevie's Place Center per year?
Well, I know in Fairbanks, I don't know the exact number, but we get called out on a regular basis.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for what you do for Alaska. Up next is Leigh Bolin. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Hi. Thank you very much for the opportunity to give comment today. My name is Leigh Bolin, and I'm the Executive Director of the Resource Center for Parents and Children, which has the Stevie's Place Child Advocacy Center. We serve the Fairbanks North Star Borough, Interior Alaska, and the North Slope, and we serve between 300 and 400 children a year. I'm also the president of the board of the Alaska Children's Alliance, which is the membership organization for child advocacy centers statewide. I've been working with victims of crime in various capacities since 2007, and I've been working with Alaska Child Advocacy Centers for over 10 years. Prior to my current role, I managed the Child Advocacy Center in Dillingham that served the Bristol Bay region. I'm calling in today to express the importance of child advocacy centers in our state and the need for child advocacy centers to be in the operating budget for fiscal year 26. Child advocacy centers are an evidence-based model to provide the immediate response to children who have experienced severe abuse. We respond to sexual abuse, felony-level physical abuse, and witness to violence, particularly homicide or threat of life. We work alongside law enforcement, Office of Children's Services, tribal partners, the district attorney's office, mental health professionals, forensic medical services, and many more to provide a multidisciplinary response to children 18 years old and under, as well as adults with developmental delays. Our referrals come directly from OCS and law enforcement. We operate 24/7 to meet the needs of children we serve. We also provide ongoing advocacy for the parents and children for the duration of their case, which for some of our families can be years. We currently have cases awaiting trial from 2017. I have firsthand seen how families come into our agency on the worst days of their life. They're afraid of being involved in the system, and how learning of the child abuse they've endured will change their lives. They leave feeling supported, heard, validated, and understand the next steps in the process. We meet the needs of the family by connecting them to resources. We also work to hold the system accountable to ensure that the children have the best chance of receiving justice for the abuse they've endured. Alaska has some of the highest rates of child abuse in the country. It's our duty to ensure that children are receiving the best possible response to the abuse that they've experienced. Research shows that child abuse left without intervention can lead to increased mental health symptoms, including suicide, substance use, and long-term negative physical health consequences. Child advocacy centers give children who've experienced abuse.
Ms. Bolin, please wrap up your testimony.
Yes. They deserve to have this investment in their healing. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. Up next is Rebecca Braun. We're going all the way back to Juneau. So please state your name and affiliation, and you have 2 minutes.
Hi. Thank you very much, members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Braun. I live in Juneau, and I am a parent of a high school student and concerned Alaskan. And I'm calling in to urge you to support a significant and sustained boost to the K-12 funding formula equal to a $1,000 increase to the BSA to begin to make up for years of losses to inflation. I have not taught for a long time, but I used to, and I happen to have taught in the 1990s for a couple of years at Juno Douglas High School, where my son is currently a junior. And for the last few years, I've served on the site council at this school, and the difference between now and 25 years ago is really striking. For example, in 1997, when I finished my master's in teaching at UAS, several of my classmates applied for an open English teaching job at JDHF. There were over 30 applicants at the time for that one job. Last year, school started with an open, full-time English teaching position because the school had zero qualified applicants willing to take the job. And this is happening across the state. This year, there were 598 vacant teacher positions when school started, the highest number ever recorded, and up 230% from fall of 2020. We know that student success is associated with the presence of experienced, qualified teachers and supportive relationships with those teachers. Having no teacher is unacceptable. Having 600 missing teachers is an indication of a system in crisis. I believe it's really foolhardy to starve education while spending more and more on incarceration. I understand we have a systemic fiscal imbalance, but I believe we have the capacity to generate the revenues we need if we have the political will. And I applaud the leadership of this committee in opening those revenue conversations. In my view, we can't afford not to. Thank you again for your time and leadership.
Thank you, Ms. Braun. Up next, we have Gay Wellman. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you have 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you for allowing me to speak on this topic and this opportunity. I live in the Copper Basin area in Kenny Lake, and I'm here as an individual as well as a professional dementia education specialist working for the Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska. I don't know how many of you have been touched by someone in your family or friends that had dementia. If you have, you understand why this is such a critical funding need, being able to, and so I'm here to advocate for dementia and caregiver community and to encourage you to support the growing need for funding, increasing the funding for that particular, as well as any of the state dementia prevention programs, such as the ones that Alzheimer's Resource provides. I facilitate several online Zoom support groups. It's amazing how that has been working so well. These groups have been functioning for over 4 years now, the ones that I've been doing. And I want to invite you. I invite anyone to give me a call. I'll find out what it's like to be a caregiver from the horse's mouth, so to speak. I would invite you to come and participate in one of our support groups and hear from the caregivers themselves what it's like to try to take care of their loved ones, the people that they're working with, that they're partnering with, to make sure that they have a productive and safe life. The idea of not having enough funding to support Medicare, Medicaid, not having a place to take the person you have left with so that you can get that relief, if you're trying to do this on a 24/7 basis, it's not possible, and you have to have some kind of support. And the importance of education about dementia is critical. I also want to, at the same time I'm saying this, I'm really glad to hear so much support for the child advocacy program. We have one here in the population.
Thank you, Ms. Melvin. Can you please wrap up your testimony?
Yes. Okay, all right. I just wanted to say it's really gratifying because I worked in that field as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, ma'am.
And couples will consider the importance of advocating for increasing funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next is Reverend Andy Bartell. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
committee members. Thank you. My name is the Reverend Andy Bartell, and I am a resident and faith leader in the community of Anchorage, Alaska. I'm testifying today on behalf of myself in support of a substantial and sustained increase of a student allocation as part of the operating budget of $1,000 per student or more. I am a product of public schools and a graduate of the University of Alaska. My denomination believes, and I quote, all children have the right to quality education. Parents and governments have an obligation to provide them with the access. Our state constitution has a similar statement. My wife and I chose to return to Alaska to raise our two sons a decade ago, in part because of the strength and diversity of the Anchorage School District. Unfortunately, over the past 10 years, we have watched dozens of gifted and beloved educators leave their jobs because of insecure and inadequate school funding. Because of years of flat funding when considering inflation, our schools are now looking at draconian budget cuts that will undermine our state's economic future as not only educators leave, but families and students leave for other locales that prioritize the importance of public education. I implore you to pass meaningful educational funding reform as part of our operating budget so that our schools can continue to produce bright, talented, and innovative leaders for our state well into the future. Thank you all for your good work and for prioritizing education funding in our state.
Thank you, Mr. Bartell. We appreciate it. Next up is Sarah Furman. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Hi. My name is Sarah Furman. I live in Fairbanks. And I want to comment on Senate Bill 56 and 57 around the state allocation of funding to the Alaska Gasland Development Corporation. And I'm calling in to say I don't support any further allocation of funding to AGDC, and I think actually it would be best for Alaskans if AGDC was dismantled. And over the last 15 years, the state has allocated nearly $500 million to AGDC for the LNG gas line project, and as of today, there's still nothing to show for that. That's 15 years of state money going there. For nothing so far, and if anything, our energy systems are less secure now than they were when AGDC began. And this is an unelected entity that is asking for several million dollars just for annual operating budget. It has the state's highest paid employee, Frank Richards, making $480,000 a year. But somehow there's not really accountability for any deliverables that he is delivering to the state. Think about if that $500 million had stayed in the permanent fund, the state could have netted $1.1 billion by now. And we're listening to testimony over and over again of things that actually need funding, schools and mental health. Meanwhile, we're willing to throw several million dollars a year just for the operating costs of AGDC. So this just seems like a waste of taxpayer dollars when the state budget is really stretched. And the other thing, Senate Bill 50, this is another $50 million that is state is requesting as a backstop. Sounds like that maybe the governor's going to rescind that, but it hasn't happened yet, so I'm just going to say while I have the mic that we should not be giving $50 million to ADA to back the LNG pipeline. It's a project that's economically not viable.
Thank you, Ms. Furman. Please wrap up your comments.
Thanks.
Thank you. Up next, we're going down to Homer. Nantia Crescentu, please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Hello. I'm Nantia. I'm actually physically in Homer. I'm calling because I'm not sure if this is the proper forum for this discussion, but I was directed here by another state representative. My issue is the Medicaid cuts that Nick Begich voted for in the House of Representatives budget resolution yesterday. This is a $1.8 billion problem for Alaska, 29% of federal funding. 36% of all births in Alaska are funded through Medicaid, 36% of child health care, and 76% of nursing homes.
care is medically funded. So I'm not sure, as I said before, if this is the proper forum for this discussion. However, I am concerned for the state of Alaska's fiscal capability to absorb the cost if the funding is revoked. My understanding is that it's a matching program, $1 of Alaska funds to 1.1 federal matching. So I wonder how much consultation there was between Begich and the Senate Finance Committee when he made that decision. And I mean, it would be nice if we could have a discourse in the discussion about this, but I don't think, according to what I've heard since I've been on the call, that actually happened here. However, do we have any mechanisms or procedures to censure our representatives for putting Alaska on the dole to take up the slack for his vote? I mean, what mechanisms do we have to protect our money?
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Please wrap up your testimony.
That's basically all I have to say. And how many members are in attendance on the call, I'd like to know, out of the seven that sit on the committee?
We have five members here.
Okay.
Thank you, ma'am. Going back to Fairbanks, Carolyn Loeffler, please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Carolyn Loeffler. I am representing myself. Thank you to the members of the Senate Finance Committee for taking testimony today. I'm calling in support today of our public schools and the future of our state. I'm a mother in Fairbanks with two young children and expecting the arrival of a third this summer. The Fairbanks North Star Borough School District has been cutting programs and closing schools for over 5 years. This year, they voted to close three elementary schools, including my daughter's. There is now talk of removing 150 positions and increasing classroom sizes again. Plagued by skyrocketing inflation, out-migration, and a flat BSA rate, enrollment in our public schools continues to decline, exacerbating the problem. I urge the legislature to continue their good bipartisan work and to consult with the governor's office to ensure that the proposed education funding increase includes reasonable priorities from the governor's office, including a significant boost to the transportation funding. Alaskans cannot endure another veto of education funding. We have maxed out what we can do locally. The future of education in our town relies on legislative action. Working age Alaskans are leaving because our state has chosen not to fund services that support raising families here. As a result, talented people are seeking better opportunities for themselves and their children elsewhere. With them, they take their good ideas, entrepreneurship, and innovation that the Alaska economy desperately needs. I don't blame them. Without an increase in state funding, school districts will continue to struggle, and the burden will fall squarely on the shoulders of working age Alaskans and families, and more will leave. Again, thank you for addressing this critical issue. I've heard many callers today advocating for supporting services for Alaska's children. Your child advocacy centers, supporting Medicaid, and better supported schools. It is clear that the need to support children in this state is deep. There is no doubt in my mind that whatever the outcome for education is in the 2025 session, it will have lasting implications for the well-being of our state. It is my sincere hope that we can take the long view and leave a positive, lasting legacy for generations to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Loeffler. Up next, we're going to Cordova. Mr. Peter Hoffner, please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon, Senate Finance. This is Pete Hoffner, and I'm a school board member here in Cordova. We are facing a $1.5 million deficit in our $7.7 million budget. Last year's increase of $680 only brought in $600,000 to our district. We were fortunate to have the Native Village of EAC give us funding of $900,000 to enable our students to have a food service and student activities and not cut staffing. This year, that won't happen. The Alaska Legislative Finance has stated that an 1808 increase to the BSA would make up for the inflationary costs that have been education has been skipped over. Department of Public Safety has increased 82% since 2017. Department of Corrections, 52%. While education has lost 5.8% funding since 2017. I'm just utterly confused. It's horrid what is happening. We will be eliminating the food service, the student activities, and cutting multiple teachers. We already have had examples of this happening across the state and how to collapse an education system. I just do not understand what is going on, why we are destroying our children's future. Do people really understand what is happening? Neighborhood schools are closing, school districts are collapsing due to this lack of funding. We have failed to even talk about a stable fiscal budget. There hasn't been any new revenue looked at since 2014. And when people say,
Mr. Hoffner, could you wrap up your testimony?
I just hope somebody understands the deficit, and if some legislators could come to my town and tell the students why they won't have a food service and the sports, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Up next, back to Anchorage, is Emma Brooks. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Emma Brooks. I am calling from Anchorage. I'm a former teacher and a lifelong Alaskan. I'm calling to urge you to increase the base student allocation by $1,000 or more to make up for the loss of student funding that has happened in our schools due to inflation. When I was a teacher, my students tested in the 97th percentile for growth, but I would never go back to working as a teacher because I was compensated so poorly and I was continually laid off and my health insurance taken for the summer. So the fact that as a lifelong Alaskan, I'm now living in a state where we have increased spending to the Department of Corrections by 44% since 2017 while keeping school spending functionally flat, it's just really concerning to me, and it kind of breaks my heart. The statistics on what we have and we can save when we spend on public education are really clear. We have astronomical savings on things like the Department of Corrections and healthcare, but we have to put our money where it matters the most. And again, the research is clear that's in early childhood education. So thank you all for your service. I know you have tough decisions to make, and that's all.
Thank you, Ms. Brooks. Up next is Don Gray. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, my name is Don Gray. I'm speaking for my family, extended family, and I thank you very much, all of you, for your public service. I was a former teacher, and I was actually the first teacher on the Alaska State Board of Education back in 1983 to 1991, and served there with Barney Gottstein, Sam Keto, and several other names that you probably recognize. We had two children who were in the K-12 schools and graduated from high school in 1991 and 97, and now have two grandsons who are juniors at West Anchorage High School. I say all this as the background. I'm very impressed with what many have said about both Senate Bill 56 and 67, and it would seem that a great deal has not happened in the last half dozen or so years in terms of school funding, and I would hope that we would change this because we used to have taxation, and I don't want to scare people, but we did away with state taxation of individuals as as early as 1980 when we were about to get all this oil money, and that was the thought. And then when the legislature has passed bills aiding financing of education in Alaska, as I say, for the last half dozen years or so, the legislature goes home, and then it's been line item removed, which is what our legislation and constitution allow happen. I would hope that there be some change that indicated what was proposed. I don't know if that has reached your committee or not. That would
Mr. Gray, could you wrap up your testimony?
Okay. One quarter of the budget going to PDF and three-fourths of it to the state, that more of it be used to help our state students in K-12 and in the university. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Up next is going down to Homer, Winter Marshall Allen. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Hello, my name is Winter Marshall Allen. I'm calling in from Homer, Alaska. I'm an 18-year public education student, and I'm calling and speaking in support of increasing the BSA to at least $1,000 so that we can have the continued funding that the school systems have received the last 2 years with the emergency funding that the state has provided. Here in the peninsula where I'm at in my classroom, I don't have the physical bodies to meet the legal needs for the students that I provide. I'm a special education teacher. The funding has been a crunch situation. Currently what we're looking at is at least 3 of our schools closing and at least the loss of 20 certified teachers. And that's only with the 680. That was the minimal proposal that I think the GOP side of our legislation has submitted in regards to their amendments. So, like, closing schools is already happening. It's happening in Fairbanks. It's happening in Anchorage. We have our communities, and it's happened in Juneau. It's happened anywhere, everywhere in our state. And we've had the outcry of our community and our constituency asking for the appropriate funding of our education, the meeting of the constitutional expectation of having adequate funding to meet the needs of our students. We live in a very expensive, dynamic state. Like, our needs are not like what happens in the 48. And I hear that comparison a lot, and as somebody who spent 14 years teaching and working in Oklahoma before being here, like, that's not our reality, so we need to not compare apples to oranges. I would really appreciate this adequate funding and in securing the BSA so that maybe it is inflation proof, so that we're not arguing this the next year and it's not being kicked down. I really appreciate the conversation. Thank you for bringing it forward. Thank you for having the continued conversation. I know that it's hard. I won't take any more of your time. Have a wonderful day. Appreciate the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. Brief at ease. We're back on the record at Senate Finance. Well, this concludes this afternoon's meeting. Our next hearing is tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. The committee will continue taking public testimony from Nome, Kotzebue, Uktiyavik, Bethel, Unalaska, Dillingham, and Offnet. Is there anything else? With that, we are adjourned at 2:15.